Okay, thank you everyone. That was really useful for me in chairing this, but also I hope for the speakers in knowing what sorts of things you guys are interested in. We've got a good range of speakers today. First of all, we're going to have a kind of overview of the bigger picture quite quickly, where this fits in, and then we're going to have three different scales of community energy projects, really. So three communities that have done it, and we'll take your questions afterwards. If you have really burning questions or things you don't understand in the middle of a talk, do stick your hand up and say, but mainly keep it for the Q&A at the end. Is that okay? So straight over to Alan, who is the author of this book.
Home Energy Handbook, which is actually a guide to saving and generating energy in your home and community. So it's relevant to the subject that we're talking about today. So yeah, that's the book, the Home Energy Handbook. This comes out of a project. I'm from the Centre for Alternative Technology in Wales, and we had a project called Zero Carbon Britain, where we were unhappy basically with the targets that the government had set for reducing CO2 emissions. We didn't think that it was big enough and go quickly enough. So we decided to see if we could reduce it to zero by 2030, and we found we could. And the way we did this was, in very brief terms, was by powering down. So we reduced energy consumption by 50%. This is just in Britain. And then we... So if you look at... I'll actually skip some of these slides, I think, because we're... This is a powered-down home. So we came up with how you do this in the home. These are four different methods of reducing energy in the home. But I'm going to skip over these things because we're talking more about community energy. So the other part of it was power up, basically. So we thought that we could reduce energy consumption by 50%, and we could generate the remaining energy we needed by powering up using renewables. And that's the power of house. So quickly going over that. So let's talk about quickly about some of the easy wins, which can be you can do at community level or at home level. So power down, draft proofing, very easy to do. Loft insulation, cavity wall insulation, energy efficiency measures. These are all quick and simple things you can do at home or community level. And just briefly looking at some, the transition movement does this very well. A couple of examples here. This is this very rough photo is a project in Malvern, which is called the Gasketeers. And they went around and they looked at these lamps here, are all gas lamps. And they actually influenced C.S. Lewis when he was writing The Tales of Narnia. This is the gas lamp that you can appears in The Tales of Narnia. So they went around and they had a look at all the gas lights and found a way, they were all energy nerds working there, and they found a way of reducing the energy consumption with these very old gas lights. And then they persuaded the council that this would be a really good project to do, and it would save them lots of money. And so they came up with a technical fix themselves. They went to the council and they said, we can do this. Why don't we do it? And so the council did it, and they're now saving lots of energy, lots of money, and they only have to be maintained once a year by a woman who rides around on a bicycle. And as a result of this project, they're now introducing biogas generation. So they're going to find a way of generating biogas. So that's a kind of complete loop. That's power down and power up together. The harder gains with power down are things like solid wall insulation, replacing single glazing with double glazing, and increasing the amount of passive solar cooking. Here's an example in Bristol. This is another community project. The building on the left is a disused office block, and the building on the right is the same building, but it's been transformed. You can't actually see it very well in these pictures, but if you want to have a look at the book and talk to me afterwards about it, that's cool. The yard in Bristol, this building on the converted office block, it's basically they put an extra layer on the top and they covered the whole thing with external insulation. They also had solar thermal panels and solar PV, and they had a biomass boiler supplying six separate dwellings within that building. So that's the community energy used on a very small scale to provide six different properties in the same building. So again, the theme of the talk is really combining power down and power up, because it's no good just powering up first and not actually thinking about the power down scenarios that you need to do. Easy Wins Power Up, switch to renewable electricity supply, really quick and simple. Invest in community energy projects, move your bank account to an ethical bank that supports renewables, buying shares in offshore wind, and so on. The harder gains are all installation. They're more complicated. I mean, I won't go into details, it's quite a quick talk. This is North Harris Trust. This is a very remote community in Scotland. They wanted to put up a wind turbine to power the community. And unfortunately, this project didn't work in the end. They went through lots of planning. They got all the funding to make the turbine happen. But in the end, there was a very unusual problem with turbulence. But they only discovered this halfway through the project. So just to say that power up projects don't always work, and even, you know, strange little things that you don't expect to happen, they appear and you can't do anything about them. I mean, years of work went into this project, and in the end they couldn't do it because of this unusual turbulence problem. This is a small village hall in Cumbria where the project did work. They had a heat pump for the heating, and a wind turbine to power the heat pump.
Can I just check? Does everyone know what a heat pump is? If anyone doesn't, just can you do a 10-second explanation of a heat pump?
A heat pump takes heat from ambient sources, so from the air, from water, and from basically pumps it into a building. Just a quick explanation.
It's a backwards refrigerator.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Even with this project, there were still problems with it. Some of the villagers didn't like the fact that there was going to be a wind turbine in their village. And so as a compromise, which this is very unusual, they agreed to take the wind turbine down at certain parts of the year, in certain times of the year, which seems very bizarre and very wasteful in terms of the amount of energy that you produce, obviously because it's not functioning all the time. There we go, that's Gambles Beaver Tour. I think I'll skip over these things. Okay, so this is Vorbahn in Germany. This is a district scale community scheme. It's a very exciting project. It's basically the council in Vorbahn gave self-build developers a chance to build on this land. It's a disused barracks belonging to the French army originally. And so they gave over the land to lots of different community self-build schemes. And again, they're combining power up and power down technologies. You can't really see it here, but these are all buildings with solar PV. They've got passive solar buildings there. There's also district heating schemes and lots of other projects. The roads are completely free of cars. If you want to have a car there, you have to pay for a garage fee outside the area, so the actual district is completely free of cars, which is why there are children on the e-cycles. So CAT did a project called Energy for Action, which basically looked at what were the barriers to people changing their behaviour. And what we found was that people actually needed specific advice for their homes. They trusted people in their community, whereas they didn't quite often trust other builders or outside agencies. And they needed financial advice. They didn't necessarily want to get money, but they needed advice about how to go about the project. So this is Bristol Green Doors. This is a great scheme. Not my water over. This is a scheme where people open their houses to strangers to come and look around their projects. This can be done in any community. It happens to be in Bristol. But they have a day, and they have a great website, and you can go and look at the website. They have a day where you can go around and talk to people about what they did in their own homes. And this is the best sort of advice that people want. You know, this is what people want. They want to talk to other people who've done it. So quickly, what's the mission? Improve efficiency and thermal comfort of homes. Decarbonise wealth, which is another big topic, but anyway. Create resilient communities. Take control of our energy destiny. Take the resources we have and multiply the benefits we gain from them, and create a loop where you can generate money from power up schemes and put it back into energy saving and power down schemes. Wealth can add more if it has added value. So you could invest lots of money in corporate renewable power, and we actually need that as well as part of the Zero Carbon Britain project. We need offshore wind, we need all these big technologies that take corporate investment. But community energy delivers benefits to people on the ground. Okay, so Okay, so what these projects I've talked about have in common, carbon emissions reduction was important, but the primary benefit was also was social, actually. None are trying for self-sufficiency, but all want to be more self-reliant. There may be cash savings involved, but actually the common cause and shared values are bigger motivations for people. All schemes needed some sort of professional help. They have a core of dedicated amateurs, but in a wider circle of people helping when needed. And public consultation was absolutely essential to their success. And I'm trying to find... I don't know where it's gone, but anyway, there's a community in Scotland called Fintry, and they had the chance to buy a share of a wind farm. They bought a 10% share, 10% share of a wind farm, and the wind farm developer actually gave them the money to take their share, and they paid back through the earnings that they made from their share of the wind farm. And then so at the moment it works out about £40,000 a year that they're earning. Once the mortgage is paid off, they'll be earning about £300,000 to £400,000, and they're taking that money and they're reinvesting it in their village, in Fintry, and they're doing that in terms of energy saving projects, in terms of reducing fuel poverty, and also in other projects like having orchards and things like that. I've got a really great DVD called Winds of Change, which if people want to have it, well, I probably can't show it yet, but anyway, but I'll show you the actual cover, and I'd recommend getting hold of them because it's a great example of making money from Power Up and reinvesting it in your local community. That's Fintry. And that differs from normal wind farm schemes where they give you just a thing called community benefit, which is just a percentage of their overall.
So a big waste of time, community benefit.
Right. So there's some
Let's keep that for the discussion. We're going to come on. We're going to have a Q&A all round once all four have spoken.
So there's one community, I think it was in Devon, and they refused to take the community benefit, even though it was free money. They refused to take it because they thought the wind farm was forced on them. But actually, the Fintry model is much more engaging, and it makes more sense for the developer and for the village.
Okay. Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brilliant. Fintry, Fintry.
Yes, that's it.
Brilliant, thank you very much. Okay, Chris. So, Chris is from Awesco, which spun out of Transition Town Lewis, and you're going to talk about the four PV projects you've done?
Yeah.
Great.
So I'm Chris Rowland from Awesco, started up by Transition Town Lewis in 2006. Seems like a long time now. The original company was, we won a contract to run a microgeneration grant scheme on behalf of Lewis District Council, and we've done that for the last 5 years, and that benefited about 250 homes with solar thermal, wood-burning stoves, and a few heat pumps, and I think one or two PV projects. After that, we set up a second company, which was to raise through a share issue money for a community renewable energy project. And that company is Industrial Problem Society for Community Benefit, and we started that off in 2010. So just go back, the original company is actually a private limited company, but none of the profit goes to the directors. We receive nothing from that. And the whole purpose of it is to aid the Industrial Improvement Society and to help people in Lewis with energy efficiency. And our website split into two halves, one half which is about community energy and the other half which is about energy efficiency. There was a moment when we were going to convert the limited company to the Industrial Improvement Society, and we were just told, don't do that, it's just not necessary. So the original company, we worked Transition Town Lewis very closely and Lewis District Council. We all met through an open space event about energy in Lewis, and then set up Awesco. We've run energy fairs. I think we've done about four of those now, and there's one of those on today in Lewis. And we've done, I think, three open house events, and there's one of those next weekend in Lewis. And we've built on that year on year, and we've supported local installers through doing that, and just as you say, about the importance of getting people to understand the technology and the people they really want to understand it from homeowners around them. We've used that to give people confidence in this technology and confidence in local installers who are good at doing the work. Okay, so you want to set up a community energy project, but you're going to need some money. You're going to need a bit of confidence, and the right people need to come together to do that. I couldn't have done it on my own, and I certainly needed the other people in Avesco as directors who brought technical skills, links within the community, and skills about how to set up an industrial and property society to make it work. All of them, except for me, are unpaid and all volunteers. I work part-time for Avesco. You need a lot of commitment. It is a lot of hard work. And you need to find some sort of community benefit. That might just be that you're helping your community become more energy efficient, but it might be other things. It might be finance for a community orchard or something like that. And you're trying to build a sustainable business for the future. It's going to be there for a long time. You want it to be there for a long time. And you're also holding people's hard-earned money. You've got to look after that, and that's a huge responsibility. And you're creating a new kind of company, put re-economy on. I think hopefully we're moving to decentralise, power down, move away from the large utilities control over there. Hard work, but it's fun. This is the launch event in the town hall. Harvey's Brewery was our first project, and they got behind the project, and they made a solar beer for us. We raised all of the money through that one event. Nick Rouse, who's one of our directors, he built a model of the power station, or the warehouse with PV panels on it. Nick also built a bike that you cycle and powers light bulbs. He's wonderful, he's an engineer. Everything he does is as a volunteer. Just the whole thing came together at the right moment, with the right feed-in tariff, at the right scale for us, about a year ago. So the first project, we raised just over £350,000. We've got 247 investors. It's 98 kilowatts of PV, or 545 PV panels on the roof of the brewery.
Can I just stop you for one sec? Are these slides going to be available for people if they want them? So don't worry too much about scribbling down everything on the slide.
I'm happy for everyone to have the figures and look at them in detail if they want as PDFs.
Be on a Dropbox.
I don't know quite how it will get out to anybody who wants it can have it, either by communicating contact or through transition network.
If you give your slides to Jay, Jay's not here today.
I think Jay's had them by email, so it should be alright.
But I think that something
Okay. we can communicate, but also communicate direct if you want, if you just want to give your email at the end of the session so it gets emailed to you. That's the simplest probably. But.
We needed £306,000 to make the project go ahead. And we had to complete by the end of July when the first feed-in tariff cut came. This was over 50 kilowatts, this project, so it had to be done by then. The install was fantastic. They got it in on 27th of July and it was commissioned. That was an enormous ask of them, and within the terms of the contract we said, if you do not complete by then, you will take them off the building and give our money back. And they signed up to that. And I think that's pretty brave of them, and they did it on that basis. And at the last minute we found out there was a little bit of work that needed to be done on the roof, and they were installing while people were repairing the roof at the same time. But everyone got together to make that happen. In the first year we generated 92,100 kilowatt hours. It hasn't been a very good year in terms of sum. The installer predicted that we could generate 92,361, almost exactly what their prediction was, and this has been a bad year. We're in the south, so that's good. It's flat rather than elevated and facing towards the sun, but it's done exactly what we expected. And we've now total income from feed-in tariff, so that we've got £31,445. And a little bit of export to the grid, not very much. Harvey's used most of this electricity in chillers in this building, and we reckon we save them £6,000 a year. They got free electricity from the project. We sell the rest via a power purchase agreement with Good Energy. It's a little bit of a nightmare selling it because of the size of the project. You have to go through Ofgem and you're a super generator, which is slightly larger because of the scale that we're at, and in order to claim things like Lex and Regos, which are worth a few pence to me, I have to go on the Ofgem website and transfer those over to Good Energy every month. It's not, that bit's crazy at the scale that we're at, but nevertheless it pays a little bit more money to investors. PV is easy. It's a great shame that the feed-in tariff, but there isn't a feed-in tariff rate for communities. because at the time we did the Harvest Brewery project, a lot of people phoned us up and said, how did you do that? We want to do the same. We weren't too pleased to help them do the same, but they cut. And what happened in December of last year disrupted a lot of those projects. So more government policy to support social enterprises was helped. They had given some. You can still get the Enterprise Investment Scheme tax incentive, which is one of the things investors wanted from the project if they were specifically looking at a financial return. And I think after December of this year, you won't need an energy performance certificate if you're a community project as well, which helps a little bit too. Since Harvey's, we've done a further three projects because we raised more than enough money through the first share issue. We also had a loan from Pure. Pure lend to community renewable energy projects. And it's well worth looking at their loan because it's a very low interest rate. We've done 35 kilowatts at a local secondary school priory, and that was very much because the eco group wanted to see that happen. I went to the East Sussex County Council and said, how many schools are going to put PV on? They told me they were going to do all themselves, not to worry. But in actual fact, after a bit of digging, I found out it was about 4 out of about 50 schools. And I said, well, come on, give us one of the schools so that we can do a project and push for that to happen. And we did get that through. The school was great. All the governors all wanted it to happen. Barton Nursery is a small veg box scheme just outside of Lewes. They've got chillers in their building. They were struggling to pay their electricity bill. They use the Lewes pound, they sell at the market in Lewes, and we really wanted to find a way of helping them, and they wanted something to happen in terms of renewables. So we installed 9 kilowatts of PV on the roof of their farm. There's kind of like a nice link that they're growing local veg, we're producing renewable power, they're using the Lewes pound, they're helping to employ me to carry on to go to do another project. Finally, Brickyard Farm, that's 20 kilowatts. They've got a business called Secret Campsite, a furniture recycling business, and an edible garden. And Tim from Brickyard Farm was really keen to do a community project. He doesn't benefit a great deal from this. He doesn't use a lot of electricity, but it just fitted in with the ethos of his own business. And having businesses or sites, site owners, who have the same kind of thinking as you really helps. I think we know that they're the people we want to help, and they want to help us succeed. The total investment so far is over £400,000. We've got to raise a little bit more money, but we'll either borrow or we'll do another second share issue to do that. And some of the income from these projects is set aside to keep the Vesco going as a business. So when I show you the next slide and you see the rates of return, you'll have to deduct from those rates of return the fact that we have to set up the projects and manage them. And the rates of return are pretty good. It's interesting, on Harvey's Brewery, the cost of the PV panels for 98 kilowatts was £300,000. And when you look at the cost of Priory School and 35 kilowatts, how much the price of the panels has dropped during that period of time. So the PV panel makers, someone was doing very well out of the feeding chain. So it was right that our government should reduce the cost of that. And also the return on investment for primary school is slightly better than Harvey's Brewery because this is on a south-facing pitched roof, so it generates more electricity. These two projects are smaller. Barton Nursery is going to give the smallest rate of return, but it was probably one of the nicest projects in transition terms. It linked up lots of things, so we're very keen to do it.
Were they post-changing bits?
So there was a drop in the feeding tariff summer of last year, and these ones have all just been completed when the latest cut came. It's getting more difficult to make the projects work. All of these got free electricity. I don't think I could do it free electricity over 20 years now.
How's the returns split up between...
Can we... Because we're going to see other returns as well, so I think great to keep the questions so all of the speakers can respond, maybe. Is that all right?
I know, yeah. I was wondering how... I'll get you.
Okay, sorry. We've got two other great presenters as well.
So moving on, we use some LEAF funding, work with Barking Parish Council. We did a survey of the whole of the parish for renewables, and they did a lot of work on insulation from homes as well from that. That was a very successful project. And we did a project at Mountfield Road looking at the primary school, the swimming pool and the tertiary college and district heating using combined heat and power and biomass boilers. We learned from that, and I'm glad we didn't spend our own money on the feasibility study, that it is expensive. And even by trying to reduce the scale of the scheme, it's quite difficult to make that work as a retrofit. It looked like it was very viable, but when we came back with the consultant's figures, it's quite difficult to make that work. We're looking for a large-scale PV site now, so I'm quite interested in what Westmill have done. I'd like to do 1, 2, 3 megawatts in a field somewhere. The hard thing is finding a field in the far bank. Who wants to do that with you? Who's got a connection to the grid? And we're looking at other renewables, but within the Barkham work, we looked at hydropower on the River Ouse. It doesn't look like that's going to work. It's quite difficult for us. We're in a national park, wind turbines are a problem. PV is very nice and simple for us in Lewis. And we're working with other communities to share information and learn from them. And we continue to support to our community. Some of the barriers, PV tariffs fantastic. Wish that there was a community one. Really need clear policy from government. What happened to December was just a nightmare. We want a government who's committed to renewable energy. I just don't feel that's happening at the moment. I think we're going backwards. There's this moment we're all going forwards, and now it just doesn't seem to be like that. And look what Germany did. Well, at one point in the summer, with all of their PV, they generated 25% of their electricity solely from PV panels, admittedly in the daytime in the summer. But think how many power stations that takes to achieve that. We might look at a new heat incentive. There is one called Woolhope Wood Heat. They've used that for a community project, which looks great. I'd like to learn from that. Want to know how to scale up? Went to a meeting with JEC. Communities will never be able to do this at scale. Give us the tools to do it, I could sort of say for that. And switching suppliers. I couldn't agree more. I think Friends of the Earth are doing a campaign asking people to switch to good energy and eco electricity. It's a very simple thing to do, but it says we want to put our money in renewables, the public. So I think
and you can get money for your groups.
Yes. Yes. And lastly, a voice for community energy projects. Sort of feel now that it's a time for those who succeeded to connect up together and give out information to those who want to do the same, and finding some sort of body that might do that. Okay, so that's the end of the beginning.
Are we close to the end?
Yes, we are. Almost right. Plan local. We work for Future and Property UK, all brilliant. Pan Local have a fantastic app that you can use. Property UK, wonderful on setting up a company. Okay, do it yourself, people's power station. Someone, there's a lady called Barbara Hamilton, who worked local in West Oxford, and she's talking about people's power stations, building up lots and lots of little projects to form what's like a large power station. And we just want to help others achieve the same.
Brilliant, thank you, Chris. So, Pete is one of the founding pieces of energy behind Bath and West Community Energy, which we're about to talk about. Also of relevance, maybe more to the Q&A session, Pete sat on the board for DEC's LEAF scheme and is on the board for the current RH22 scheme, Renewable Heat Premium Payment. And he also sits on the boards of the Communities and Climate Action Alliance, which starts to address the issue about a community energy network, and the Ministerial Community Energy Contact Group, which has been tasked by DEC with coming up with a community energy strategy. So lots to talk about in the Q&A. Sorry, you asked me to introduce you, you said I could make it up. So
yeah, thank you very much. I'm here to talk about Bath and West Community Energy and been asked to look at, give you some sense of the journey that we've been through, where we started from, and some of the kind of reflections on the process to hopefully kind of help boost confidence and we can do this. So, Bath and West Community Energy started in 2009, where else but in a pub. Top room, how many transition networks and projects start in pubs? There must be a lot. Top room of a pub, Transition Bath Energy Group, and we kind of spent a long time talking about what we need to tackle in the area, working with commercial companies, how do we make it work for our area. And then somebody said, well, why shouldn't we do this ourselves? And there's a beguiling simplicity to that statement. Let's do it ourselves. And you think, why not? Let's do it ourselves. And then as soon as you state that step, let's do it yourself, you just open up a huge vista of questions and challenges, but ultimately really exciting. Once you make that first step, our experiences, things start to fall into place. Because if you can start with enough enthusiasm, with enough ambition, then people around you start to think, oh yeah, that sounds good, I want to do that too. And you start to build a sense of momentum. So from 2009, we decided we want to do it, started looking around, who else do we want to work with in the area, found out that Transition Caution were doing exactly the same thing as us, thought, well, let's do it together, and the idea of Bath and West Community Energy was formed in 2010. A number of the recurring themes of the discussions in those early days, clearly community benefit had to be at the centre of everything we were doing. That's why we were a community benefit society as opposed to a cooperative society, a bona fide cooperative. And Chris mentioned it, easy things first. There's a temptation to do perhaps what might be seen as the most exciting thing first. But we felt it was really important to do something that could be done quickly so that you get that sense of progress, people can see what you're doing locally. So we thought, right, solar PV, that's relatively simple, straightforward, we can get that going relatively quickly. So that's what we focused on. But ultimately what we're looking at is financial sustainability. We wanted a strategy that would take us from where we are, a group of volunteers, into a financially sustainable community enterprise that's able to pay people to do work. Because when you start paying people, people can put real time into it rather than trying to fit it into the rest of their home, life, work. So financial sustainability was the longer term goal. And to do that, we felt to be ambitious and think large, think scale. Because it's only when you start doing lots of projects can you start to generate an income sufficient enough to start employing people. Particularly when you only take a very small amount out of the feeding tariff, which was our intention, because we wanted to feed the rest back into the community. But in order to do that scale, we quickly realised that just offering a social and environmental dividend, if you like, to potential investors wasn't enough. We looked around at the share offers that were happening at the time, and most of them were generating tens of thousands of pounds and saying, well, we'll give you 5% maybe in 5 years' time, or might be if we're lucky, sort of thing. So we made the decision fairly on that we had to give a financial return to investors, and we decided that would be 7% return and try and do that in the first year. So those were the kind of things that came together, the discussions that we were having, if you like, to kind of think, well, how do we create this business strategy? And so what we ended up trying to establish financially sustainable enterprise, looking at renewable energy, energy efficiency and energy supply. We want to move into being in a position where we're generating enough energy that we can supply to consumers as well. Strong community model, obviously, building community resilience. So thinking scale, well, we thought, well, in terms of our local renewable energy target, we should be looking at 25% of that order of that target by 2025, rather. So that was about 25 megawatts. So we thought, right, well, we've got to do something reasonably large within the next couple of years. So we're targeting 6 megawatts by 2015. And the purpose of that sort of level was, if you deliver that, you're going to need to generate capital of around about 10, 11 million pounds. If you're taking 1% per year of CapEx to cover overheads, which is our intention, total capital cost of the project, 1% of the 10 million pounds per year, then that's 100,000 pounds. So by 2015, we want to be generating enough overhead, 100,000 pounds, can employ a couple of people, organisation costs, that sort of made work. If we could do that, we felt we could generate 300,000 pounds on average into a community fund per year. More later years, less early years. That sounded kind of quite substantial and worth going for. So, first couple of years from 2011-2012, the main things that we've managed to achieve along that path, if you like, we've secured a loan facility with Scottish and Southern Energy of £1 million. That's debt finance that we can draw down when we've got the projects. We had a successful share offer, raised £750,000 from around 200 members, offering 7% return. which we paid in the first year. We paid the 7% a couple of months ago. The first dividend went out, the first interest payment. Together, that capital finance has enabled us to install 360 kilowatts of solar PV across 10 schools and community buildings. That was the first tranche of projects that went in before December 2011, before the FIT was supposed to go down the first time. And as Chris, that was a nightmare kind of in the last couple of weeks, but it all managed to get in, and then the government decided, well, if it wasn't December, we'll do it in March instead. So
well, there was
thanks for telling
they
us.
They did get pushed on that.
Yes, they did. And it was good that they did do that. And just recently, we've finished commissioning a 250 kilowatt system linked to a business park, which is very exciting. That's just before the last solar feeding tariff had gone down. We now think that with solar PV, we can still install. We're looking at a 1 megawatt system. We think if we can get the capital cost down to £1,100 per kilowatt installed, then the 1 megawatt system works. And the prices that we're getting are quite close at the moment. So it's not far to go before that sort of system could stack up, even with the feed-in tariff reductions. We've established a very important, productive cooperation agreement with our local authority. Been really helpful in helping us get over the initial hurdles. They've played an important convening role, bringing together internal people within the local authority, planners, the property department, talking about leases in the schools, and also external partners as well. Been very important, and just recently have given us a £100,000 grant, which is even better. That grant is going to go into project development. So rather than funding salaries per se, it's going into funding the development of the next one tranche of projects, because ultimately that's where the organisation's sustainability is going to come from. And it's enabling us to develop a number of wind and hydro projects. So we've got one single turbine sites that we're developing, and a couple of hydro sites. One really exciting one, close to the centre of Bath on the River Avon. It's a 300 kilowatt double Archimedes screw project, which Archimedes screws are these large screws which kind of transfer water down and turn the turbine in the process. Very old technology, in fact. Archimedes, in fact.
Well, the Egyptians, of course.
Indeed, yeah. But very good. Very good, appropriate technology in the right place. And would be a really high profile project if it came off in the local area. So we managed to do a number of things, and the thing that characterises this is that kind of building sense of momentum from about middle of 2011. Things started to fit into place, and suddenly you're on a kind of conveyor belt that is in danger of kind of overtaking us. We just managed to kind of keep it in check. Just quickly on the kind of finances and how the different types of finance, because it's quite important. Somebody mentioned, how do we kind of get this going when we've got no money? There are three types of finance that we've utilised. The first is the investment from individual investors, up to £20,000 maximum. That's all gone into projects, and we've said explicitly that is only going to go into projects because that's the least risky use of other people's money. Again, Chris, absolutely right. One of the key kind of things around here is a sense of responsibility. You're holding other people's money. We've got £750,000 of other people's money. It kind of focuses the mind into the least risky thing, the projects. That means, how do we develop the projects? And before we had the grant from Baines, the way we were doing it was we'd managed to develop a group of energy consultants that were working in the area that were prepared to effectively work at risk. Because it was solar PV, and the risk is relatively low from a planning point of view, they were prepared to say, right, we will do it, we will help you develop the project, and if you get the project up and running to financial close, then give us a little bit of money, which is what we did. And it worked exceptionally well as a process. So it reduced the liability on us as an organisation at a time when we had no capital and no income, but it meant we could get the projects up and running. The third type of finance that is absolutely vital to turn the kind of projects from niche to mainstream, if you like, or turn the organisation into more of a scale organisation, is corporate and bank debt. Without it, we're never going to get very far. The money that we got from SSE, they required us to set up a special purpose vehicle, which all the projects go into. This would be the case for any bank, would do exactly the same thing. So it limits the liability around that investment. Tell me when I've got a couple of minutes left.
Otherwise, I'll just.
A couple of minutes.
But lots of question and answer coming.
Very important special purpose vehicles. I'll talk to you about them before later if you like, but really important that you get your heads around organisationally how you set things up to make it possible to draw in the finance that you need. The other type of company that we're talking about working to set up is a family of local community enterprises, because as Bath and West Community Energy, we cover in our minds the whole of Baines and part of West Wiltshire, which is obviously larger than one community. And so what we're talking about is working with people in Radstock, Bradford and Avon, Marshfield, who have enough enthusiasm and commitment in themselves to set up their own community enterprise. We then have a family of community enterprises in our local area where we can aggregate projects, share expertise and help kind of each other go the distance that we want, because scale, when you're looking at finance, is important. Bizarrely, it's easier to get larger sums of money when you talk to banks than small. So, reflections. What's worked well? The partnerships have been exceptionally useful. The Scottish and Southern, really good. We're working with the dark side, as some might say, but we found actually really very positive. They've been very flexible. Their requirement is that we use them to install the system on any system that they loan, but only if the cost of the installation is comparable with the cheapest in the market, and we've kind of negotiated very heavily with them on that. So Scottish and Southern, that partnership's worked really well. Baines worked really well. Carbon Leapfrog.
So Baines being Bath and North
Bath
Somerset.
Bath and North Somerset, thank you very much. Carbon Leapfrog, if you haven't heard of them, very useful organisation to find out about. Through them we got a lot of pro bono legal expertise, which was absolutely
pro bono?
Pro bono, free.
Thank you.
Thank you. The development work worked very well. As I said, that was really the share offer bowled us over in terms of the enthusiasm. Yes, 7% we were offering a kind of a good return, but it's risky. I mean, we had no track record, only reasonable. We felt to give people a reasonable return, particularly when we were giving Scottish and Southern 6.5% a guaranteed return, which is still good, but it's guaranteed. We felt it was reasonable that people who were taking risks should at least get similar. Momentum being a huge part of it, double-edged sword. We think actually on reflection we probably went too quickly. There's a sense that momentum, got to keep going, but actually community memory is quite long. Actually, people remember good stuff for quite a while, and you don't have to go quite as quickly as we did. The team, really important. We started off thinking, okay, I've got a background in energy, but I know nothing about commercial finance, I know nothing about legals, I know nothing about accounting. We need to build a team around us, and one of the first things that we did, which was really very helpful, was do a bit of a skills audit of the people sitting around the table and said, what do we have, what do we don't have, and then go out and find it. And if you've got a powerful enough story to tell, people will want to come and work with you, and I guarantee that you will have most of the skills in your area and around about, just a question of finding it. Still to do. We still haven't cracked the medium-scale bank finance, the refinancing. This is
medium being
up to about £1 million. Beyond £1 million, £2 million, banks will kind of start looking at us for single projects. Up to that level, due diligence that they have to do, they say is too much. If they will loan us, it's at 9.5%, which we can't work at. What we need is 7% for members, 2% for the community fund, 1% for us. So we need a project return of 10%. So if we start kind of putting in bank debt at 9, 10%, it just doesn't work. So that's the biggest challenge that we still have to do in terms of proving our model. We've got to finish establishing partner community enterprises, securing more development finance. Great to hear the government's looking at setting up a £15 million at-risk loan fund that will be launched in March. just about time, integrate energy efficiency, and we're not financially sustainable here. For the first year, I'm getting paid something, which is great, but we're not where we need to be, but we're kind of somewhere along the line.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you. So we're kind of going up in scale, and Frank's going to talk about Westmilk and its plans to take over the universe.
Could you say your name again?
Me, Peter Caveman.
Thanks. Well, my name's Frank, I'm project manager at Westmilk Solar. I don't know if we're trying to take over the universe yet, but maybe we'll settle for a big six power plant. So, we're about Westmilk Solar. We're a 5-megawatt solar farm based between Oxford and Swindon in Oxfordshire. And we generate about 4.5 gigawatt hours of energy per year, which is enough for roughly 1,400 average two-bedroom houses, and that's going to take about 2,000 tons out of the atmosphere. So it's a 30-acre site, 20,000 panels, got built with unanimous approval in July last year, and similar to Chris and Pete, we had an issue where we had to build it in time to get the high rate, the original rate of feed-in tariffs, and it was literally a matter of hammering the last few solar panels about a week before the deadline, so that got built. Next to Westmilk Wind Farm, which some people might have heard of, which was one of the original cooperative community energy projects in the UK, started by the farmer Adam Twine, who owns the land and the site, and he's quite a visionary in these kind of matters. And energy resilience is very much something he has in mind from his farming perspective and the need to manage the resources we have. So we think we're the UK's first cooperatively owned solar farm, and our chairman tells us that he thinks we're the world's largest, and he's just written a book on these kind of things, so hi, Justin. So, in terms of the project itself, we're a £16.5 million project. As I said, we're built with private funding, purely to be built and finished in time to get the original rate of feed-in tariff. So that was, we couldn't get a community share offer in place in time to build it in time, so we went to a company called Blue Energy, and they specialised in developing solar parks, and so they built the solar park with their own finance and put in place an option agreement for the cooperative to buy the project back from them at a later date once we had our own funding in place. So as of the end of July, we launched a share offer, and we raised, there's a limit of £4 million, which is the sterling equivalent of €5 million, which is an EU designated limit for this kind of share offer. If you want to raise more than that, you have to go through a whole lot of further hurdles, legal due diligence and so forth, so we really stuck to that limit. We were oversubscribed by roughly 50%, so we're taking about £6 million. And we're stuck at this £4 million limit, so we had to determine how we're going to get as much community equity in as possible and make use of that so that as many people as possible could be a part of the co-op. So what we did was we went back and did a private placing, so that's just the people who had already subscribed for shares, and there's much less, much fewer kind of regulatory hurdles and requirements around those kind of private shareholders to existing members. So we're able to take in another million or so from that, and that means that we have to raise less debt, which is what we're doing at the moment, to pay for the overall purchase price of £16.5 million. So the exact returns obviously slightly depend on the terms of the debt, which we're negotiating at the moment, but they're in the region of 9-11% a year on an internal rate of return basis, which accounts for future inflation, basically. And that's coming from the feed-in tariff and a power purchase agreement with Good Energy. And we've got about 1,600 members. So it's been touched on before, but I just wanted to briefly run down some of the benefits of community energy. Not that anyone needs to know them, but as I'm sure we're aware, you know, the big six, they've got a virtual, you know, duopoly on the market, and need to break through this and get some low carbon energy generation in there to you know, do what we all need to which we all recognise is booming around climate change and renewable energy. So community renewables, as opposed to big six utility groups, you know, financial returns go to local people in the area. There's a positive loop, positive feedback, which has been mentioned before. People own their own electricity supply, and that's a really good thing. And there's a lot of research which shows that when people understand where their energy is coming from, they think about using it and how they use it more, and they're more likely to conserve energy and think about it in different ways. It's communities taking positive action for themselves, and I think that's really important. It's not just the kind of, oh, climate change, it's polar ice caps melting, we can't do anything about that. It's doing something on the doorstep which everyone in this room will know about from the transition. Really important as well, there's a real element of democracy in there. So when you buy a share, you become a member, and one member has one vote. So it's a really level kind of playing field there in terms of control and power and democracy and decision making. So research in Cooperatives UK has shown that there's about 3.5 gigawatts worth of potential community projects in the UK, which include 2, 3, 4 large scale fossil fuel power stations. So huge potential. We just need people to get out there and start doing it. So, right, what do you need to start a project? Well, from our perspective, experience, first of all, you need a site, a landowner, a business owner, a premises owner who's on board and agrees with the principles behind it, or is at the very least looking for a resident from a project. And that's really key. I mean, the project, the Westmore projects, couldn't have happened without Adam Twine, the farmer at the site. He's been really instrumental to it, and without him, we never got off the ground. So, really fun that's actually. Next, you need a community, obviously. You need people in the area who are willing to come together and explore these projects. And that's, as we mentioned, you need a core group of really active people, and then to draw in using existing social networks, groups in the community, church groups, faith groups, sports groups, any social networks to start building people in, drawing people together. After that, it's about technical feasibility, planning submissions, financial models. All those take skills and take time. There's a real point for project management and continuity in projects, because these kind of projects can take years to get off the ground and from start to finish, especially something like onshore wind. So if people are involved in the board, involved in the group, and they drop out, and you know, you need some kind of continuity in there, which could be making sure that everyone has access to all the information and so forth, or it could be a dedicated person who is in charge of making sure things run smoothly. As Pete, you know, pointed out as well, you really need some specialist legal, technical, financial skills, because they really do come in handy, and I'd really advise anyone looking at setting up a project like this to try and find a lawyer in the area who's willing to work on the board and perhaps work on a pro bono basis, because
that would be free.
And if you could get pro bono technical and financial skills for free as well, then you couldn't. So, and again, as Pete said, one of the useful things for Western we found was getting people to accept fees on a contingent fee basis. And that means that they don't get paid until, unless the project is successful. And certainly for some of the pretty hefty legal fees we've had, that's been incredibly helpful. But you do need some upfront resources, so pre-planning fees, technical feasibility fees, financial models and so forth. You need to think about where to get that funding from, whether it's maybe the landowners perhaps had to put something in at the start in anticipation of the rent that we'll be getting later, or whether you've got some early stage investors, the keenest people you can tap for a bit of upfront resource to just get it going. There's also a series of grant making bodies which have really emerged in the last few years, year, 6 months really actually. Pure the Clean Trust from BRE. There's Communities for Renewables, which is growing out of Regen, South West, a loan fund as well. So a group called FSE have a community generation fund which provides seed funding on about 75% of project cost basis. So there are some groups out there. There's also, I think, like some DEX got a community RHI fund launched or about to launch. So there is something.
RHI being?
Renewable Heat Incentive.
Thank you.
Yeah,
can 1 minute, thanks.
Sure, right. Yeah, of course. And yeah, standing consistent, so these projects take time, so you need to be aware from the start that you're in there from the long haul, and that's where continuity planning comes in as well. Things to bear in mind, when you're setting up an organisation, if you haven't set it up already, you need to think about the legal side of it, but also the rules of the organisation. So for example, in our rules, we were just allowed to issue one type of share, A shares, and then we had to go back afterwards to issue the private placement shares, which allowed us to get even more funding in. So we had to go back and change our rules and clear them through the FSA, and that took time. And if we thought about it from the outset, we would have had some kind of wording in there which would have allowed us more flexibility with our rules. So something like that. The clearance from FSA, the clearance, it all takes time. We need to build that in, and also building up the word in the community about this project, getting the word out there, it takes time. Apart from costs I mentioned already, making the case to investors. A lot of our investors, quite simply, are in it because it's a really good investment, and they might live locally, they might have heard about climate change, but the main reason they're in there is because in their mind it's a good investment. So it's really good to appeal to people on as many planes as possible. Community energy appeals to so many, such a broad church of people from so many different angles, from energy security, resilience, climate change, financial returns, move your money, ethical investment, loads of different kind of buttons you can push.
Are you on your last slide?
Yeah. So, yeah, and I'll skip through that. That's just annoying. But one thing I wanted to mention was a couple of crowdsource funding sites which have started up recently, Abundance and Microgenius. They are sites where you can go to and register your project with them. They will have investors coming to them looking for money, where places to invest, and can be a really useful source of funding. So that's just at my contact. The details are up there. Happy to talk to anyone afterwards about any projects. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thank you. So, okay, you've got an instant decision to make. You can either stay in this slightly forward-facing thing, or we can move into a circle for the Q&A. Those in favour of being lazy and staying? Sorry, I'm framing it, aren't I? Those in favour of moving into a circle? Okay, we've got more in favour. Quick!
The chairs are all linked together.
Oh, are they?
Okay,
we should stay in the Sorry.
You guys can come up to the front.
They can move it. Okay.
Yeah, that was it. Can you jump up and down and do some press ups as well? Just for the whole group. It's energy. Okay. So, if you have specific questions, you can say who you're aiming it at or whether it's aimed at the whole group. Just one point I wanted to make about precedence. Because everyone's been saying that it's really useful to have the right documents, the right skills. Carbon Leapfrog, who were a charity whose aim is to put communities in touch with experts such as lawyers, accountants, technical experts who do work for free. They are launching a precedence library. It was meant to be launched this month, but it's gone back October. It may drift a bit. They're aiming to launch this precedence library where communities who've gone through this kind of put their materials and resources up for everyone. So,
was that Leapfrog?
Carbon Leapfrog, they're called. Yes. Questions?
Mike Staley from Transition Drive. The £1,100 per kilowatt target. There are, on the financial side, there are several very large solar PV companies which are in trouble, and unjust Chinese competition seems to be the devil of the moment. But this tremendous fall in prices, you always have the technical improvement curve, which gives you much lower production costs on scale. At the same time, the less efficient producers are being driven out of the marketplace. If the 1100 pound, I'd like people who've got the background to be able to comment, is this a sustainable thing over the next 3 or 4 years? Are we going to see any slide in this, or is this a good working figure, or is it low?
1100 per kilowatt installed is for quite a large scale system, so it's for a 1 megawatt solar system. So obviously the price falls for the larger the system because the installation cost is a proportion of the total.
A lot smaller. 1 megawatt system.
So you are talking about, well, 1100 is not where we are at the moment, but we're quite close to it. And that's for good quality panels.
European made, please?
European made, not Chinese made, yes.
Yeah, that's what I think that the question seems to be worried about.
Yes, it's not Chinese made.
Subcontracting the work to sort of Chinese, young, whatever it is.
One of the real important things, concerns for us as a community enterprise, we're kind of investing other people's money in a return that is is 20 years.
Yes.
And we're taking that liability. We have to be confident that the project is good quality. Not only that, if a bank comes along and says we're going to put money into it, they are going to have requirements over the quality of the system, otherwise it's not bankable. So actually, I think from a community point of view, it's really important that we look at the higher quality end of the market, otherwise we're going to do ourselves disjustice.
So higher quality and to some, in as much as you can, ethically sourced.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, that is, I think that's a worry.
Does that include the present value of the inverter replacement?
That's the whole system. Oh, in replacement? No,
inverters.
10 years, yes. No, as well, that's just the construction costs. Then there's an operation and maintenance cost and an insurance cost, a warranty cost that you pay to kind of cover operation, maintenance, and inverter replacement.
Okay,
I'm going to cut that one there.
I'll give you the details.
I'll have really details about it. Do any of you have anything to add on that?
Only that in order to make our last three projects work, we bought Chinese panels. They were from Suntec. The first panels from Harvey's Brewery from Sharp. I'd like to have bought new European ones, but with a couple of feet in tow to make it work, I had to buy Chinese. But Suntec are pretty good.
And now, as your community project, in order to do that, did you feel you needed to talk to your community about it? Do you feel that's a kind of operational decision that you guys take?
We decided it's an operational decision. The inverters were, I think they're all European. I'm not sure. One might not be, actually.
Do you think that'll get discussed at your AGM? Do you think people will want to comment on that? Or do you think that's
good? Last weekend, it wasn't discussed.
Right. Gentleman at the back.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first is, why do you work with banks? And the second one, in Germany, for example, we have a law that gives us planning security for 20 years that the electricity company has to have to buy the electricity to a certain price. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask if it's in England the same or if it's in the same.
Who's going to start?
Well, the bank, shall I do the banks?
You do the banks.
We think banks are important because of the scale that we're going to operate at. So if scale is important for the reasons I said, let alone the fact that the crisis that we're facing and the need to do this at a large scale. So £10 million, we think if we're looking at 70% debt, that still leaves £3 million we've got to find from local people. We think that's quite a challenge. We think getting more than £3 million locally will be very difficult. That means we've got to find that other £7 million from somewhere else. We've got some money from SSE, but we're not going to get the rest of it from there. We've talked to the ethical end of the banking side, the co-op, Triodos, Charity Bank. All of them have said so far no, or 9.5%. We tentatively asked lawyers just to get a sense as to what they would, whether they would even give us a price, thinking that we could go back to co-op and say, Lloyds have given us 7%, what can you do? And they wouldn't look at us, even though Lloyds are one of the largest in terms of amounts of money, funders of renewables. So why banks? Because they're an important part of our business strategy. Without them, it won't work.
Were you coming back on the banks point in particular? No. Okay. So, and then the second part of the question was, do we have an equivalent of the German kind of legislative system which offers this kind of 20-year security? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. We do. I think we're selling our electricity at 5 pence a kilowatt hour through a power purchase agreement. Green Energy could change. In fact, it has changed because each year I sign a new contract with them. It's not fixed. I wish it was, and I wish it was at a higher rate than that.
I mean, I think it's important to recognise that there are really big differences between the UK approach and the German approach.
On the bank side. So one of the sites we're looking at is pension funds, because we're trying to get between 10 and 12 million. So we've been looking at pension funds and the possibility of them funding projects. And there's potentially a bit of potential there, but they need really big projects. So they're going to look at anything under 10 million. So in terms of the gap between 2 to 10 million, it's really only banks who are in the game. So.
Okay. I'm going to move on to lots of questions. We've only got half an hour. Lady with the red hair.
I wondered about your share offers, whether you've done much analysis on people's motivation for buying shares and how localised your share offers have been. So, for example, when it's oversubscribed, do you deliberately go for bigger investors or investors that are more local to the project?
The way we structured it was we wanted to have a local presumption in favour of local people. So we have three priority bands. Band one, highest priority, people living within 7 kilometres of the site. Band two, people living within 40 kilometres of the site. Band three, members of other cooperatives and members of good customers of Good Energy. So that's kind of rewarding people who live locally, or kind of compensating people who live locally for this project on their doorstep and getting them involved in it. And then, and also maybe to some extent rewarding people who are already, members of other energy co-ops and buying renewable energy for that and giving them the first price of the charity. But, as I mentioned, we accept, we were looking for investment from whoever, wherever, and people invested for different reasons.
Do you have a sense of how much people are environmentally motivated and how much the financial return is the real crunch?
It's interesting. I think we're planning to do a bit of analysis of that later. I mean, in terms of where people, maybe we've analysed where people have got their information from to get to us, so we can kind of get a bit of something from that. So mostly it's from local media, regional media, and then the specialist environmental media. But we also had a bit of coverage in financial media, and that's got us about maybe 10-15% of our investors. So
maybe Chris and Pete can comment on that.
Anyone could invest, and we had no idea how far we had to spread it. As it happens, nearly all the investors came from Lewis and surrounding area. So that was great.
We promoted it just locally, but people could invest from anywhere, but 90% of the investment came from the local area. And in terms of motivations, we did some market research before we did the share offer in trying to pitch the level of the return. And the market research told us that if you believe what people said, and it turned out to be fairly close, in fact, that if we'd set the return at around about 3%, 4%, we'd have got £100,000-£200,000. If we set it at 6-7%, we'd get £500,000-£600,000. And given that what we were looking for was larger than £100,000, we felt that's what sort of drove us to the higher level.
Can I just say something on the rate of return? Because it's interesting, our project is offering 4%, you're offering 7%, and you're offering near 11%. So the scale shows you what the rate of return is. We couldn't offer more than
that.
And some people come to me and talk about, oh, they put a few panels on a church. You've got to get bigger than that.
Just in terms of the scale, we built up scale, but all our projects in the first round were the same size as yours. They were between, we had one project was 8 kilowatts, and the largest was 45 kilowatts. So they were all the same, that sort of scale. We just made a compromise on what we would take as an enterprise and also what the community fund would take. The community fund wouldn't get any money for about 4 or 5 years.
Right. Okay. So Pete, all of you, off the top of your head, how many unpaid person hours has gone into getting... unpaid person years, because I think this is really important for community to get to this. How many unpaid person years into Bath and West so far?
Before April this year, I was been working on it for about 3 years and an average half time.
So there's one and a half just you, and then there's other people. You were leading, but there's other people too.
Yeah.
So we're talking numbers of personnel. Same in
I've been employed by Vesco part-time for the last 5 years, but I had to run the grant scheme, I did the leave-funded works and all those other things, and I do other work as well. Never stable the employment. There are another 5 directors of Vesco, all who are paid nothing, and the people in transition town are at launch events. They're absolutely key.
Person years again. Well, decades. Maybe we're talking person decades. Yeah. Which is, actually, it's okay, but we just need to be real about it.
I've been there since, I've been at Westmore for, since November, December last year. We've got 5 directors, I'd say it's peaks and troughs, but they're kind of run us full time since for the past year or so. And then the directors have put in a lot of work for all that, so. Yeah.
And they're unpaid?
Yeah.
Where I live, we have a provincial monopoly, BC Hydro, and we produce so much energy provincially that we're actually exporting. But within my community, which is a little island community, how would it work? So, when, say, we start setting something like this up, but the grid's already established, essentially, how do we work with that monopoly that essentially provides the power for everybody? Do we sell that to them? And, like, how does that work, basically? Like, how would that work if we're already dealing with the place? And also, the consciousness is like, oh, we have so much energy, it doesn't even matter. Yet, building resilience, we can't just be sitting there relying on, big hydro dams that are all over our province. Like, how would we address
that? Alan, have you come across any equivalents? I mean, this tends to be very country-specific as well, to talk about the rules and how it operates. But.
The island community would have just fed it into the grid, I think, and they would have made an income from that turbine if it had gone ahead. There are smaller-scale projects around doing similar things. There might be a microgrid. Island in Skore, I think, has a microgrid connecting with different communities together, but I can't give you any technical details of that.
Any other thoughts?
Just go off grid.
Yeah,
tell the company you're going off grid and then connect to yours.
So you have to create infrastructure.
There are two.
Sorry.
Go on, please.
So either you kind of, as you say, create a relationship with your the distributor, whoever that is, who owns the grid, and find out what the deal they will offer you to buy your electricity. Because I would imagine they would do, even this in this country, before kind of 10, 15 years ago, they would offer you something. It was a derisory amount, but they'd offer you something. So you just need to find out what policy the company has. You can then make a judgment whether it's worth it or not. Or alternatively, you find consumers who can take the electricity directly, and you supply them directly. So you put systems that connect directly to the metering of individual consumers. In that case, the bigger the better. If you have larger consumers of electricity, find them first, set up an arrangement with them, and then once you've got a reasonable size, then you can kind of link in smaller consumers afterwards and do as the gentleman says.
On there, because we're down to 10 minutes, there's lots of hands.
Okay, I was just going to say there's the water power scheme in Derbyshire which feeds direct to a supermarket. That's the Archimedes.
Gentleman there, and then gentleman there.
Yeah, it's a sort of question about fuel poverty and possible sort of use of local currencies and ways of engaging community in the actual process of production, not necessarily PVs, but other sources. And I'm just wondering, in terms of sort of like powering down and enabling people who are experiencing fuel poverty to be able to access renewable energies from a ethical source, if there's any thoughts.
Anything like particularly linked to local currencies or?
Anything particularly, well, say, with Lewis Pound, for instance.
Well, I'd like to find a way of the way that Lewis Pound works with the Vesco and our share issue. We haven't quite done that yet. I think Richard Heinberg was talking about ideas about linking local currencies with the value of energy.
There is the Robert Owen Community Credit Union, CDFI, in Wales, aiming to set up an energy-backed local currency, and they're quite a long way developing that, called the REN, I can't remember, and that's hydro, basically. They've done the feasibility, and they're close to getting their hydro scheme underway, and then they definitely want to link their local currency to that. And they also, obviously, because they are a credit union, they're working with people who intend to be quite often in fuel poverty. They're looking at that. They're the scheme I know that is the most trying to address all of those things. And
yeah.
If you want to come and talk later, I'll give you a contact.
I think it's a really exciting area.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah.
The only other thing, say, in terms of on the fuel poverty side is clearly there is a barrier to investment in terms of the amount of money. And we set the lowest level of investment at £500. That was the minimum that people could invest, because that was a criteria for the enterprise investment scheme. If you went below that, you wouldn't be EIS approved as a shareholder.
And the implication of EIS approval?
Is that you get 30% tax relief. So 7% suddenly becomes 10% return, which is kind of a good incentive. But it means that those less well off can't afford £500, clearly. But what we've started to look at is working with a credit union to provide kind of the opportunity for people to club together to buy a share over time. And again, that's something that I'd be really interested to trying to make work.
But the important point there is that you can at least buy £500 worth of PV if you haven't got a south-facing roof and £10,000 in the bank.
That's
you're
right.
In a better position than
it's
you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And hopefully the share, the community fund will be able to invest in energy efficiency projects.
We are going to finish on time because it's like a busy one. So we've got another 5 minutes. Sure, our heroic speakers will be prepared to wait a bit for the lunch queues to build up and talk to the people. So we've got a couple of people haven't asked questions yet.
Quick question about project viability for an organisation thinking about setting up the sort of scheme. Part A is what impact does a current fit tariff have on return on investment on your project if you're starting today?
Yeah.
And the second part of the question refers that investors tend to come for the locality of private investors. So what might the size of population impact be on
pleasure viability? Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to say there's 16,000 people in Lewis. That was enough for us to raise £300,000. We reckon we could probably raise a bit more from the local community. I reckon we're reaching about 500,000. We might sort of slightly saturate things, and we'll be looking at bank finance. So. That helps us. What's the first part of the question?
Feed-in tariff. Would you be financially viable at the current rate?
I suspect we've got to sell the electricity. Giving it free is nice and simple. And, you know, that was a good incentive. I think we're going to have to go down the road because it's 20 years now, as well as the reduction in the rate.
Pete, you've done quite a lot of work on feed-in tariff, haven't you?
I agree. So you have to sell the electricity. Our second project, we had to sell the electricity. Our first ones, we gave it away free. I think. Above 50 kilowatts with solar PV, I think we could make it work on our current model. Below 50 kilowatts, and it would be really, really difficult. So you're looking for quite large roofs. And in terms of the catchment area, I think it's a really interesting question. And I think we don't have enough, collectively, we don't have enough experience or examples to give a kind of a definite answer. Mm. I think the area, though, can be larger, as large as you can want to draw an area around. I think the locality of the project is really important, but I think you have to cut the cloth, so to speak.
Gentleman in the back row.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I have one question which sort of follows on from what's been saying. Another one that's a hot. Completely off.
You're going to have to be concise then.
Okay. Question number one: solar panels. I understand there is actually a percentage reduction in their efficiency over their lifetime.
Yeah.
And I would like everybody to comment on how that affects the viability of their schemes, or one person to comment, obviously, because we're short of time. The second thing is, I'm very interested in biogas. I've looked at a company called Methogen, and they do it on a very small scale. And I'm wondering whether there's any practical past experience that can be drawn on if you're trying to interest others in it.
Okay. Great.
Degradation
first.
A cat. We've had panels for quite some time. It's very small, actually, the panels that we've had. 5%.
The degradation is small.
Degradation.
That's over what time period?
That's 15 years.
15 years. Okay, that's pretty good.
So, yeah, we assume 0.5% per year degradation, and we build that into the financial model. So it's a factor that you have to take account of, but it doesn't mean that the projects aren't viable. You just have to take account of it.
And just biogas, keep it in your business.
That's
biogas.
We haven't had any biogas experience. Our experience of biomass suggests that all the kind of heat projects are going to be very difficult to make work just because of the risk that you're taking on as a community. It's significantly greater than for the electricity project. So I think you have to be very, very careful. Biogas, there are experience in in the north.
Community something renewable energy.
Yeah, in the northwest, or I always get northeast.
Northeast, yeah.
If you want to leave your kind of details, I can send you the comment.
CORE have published a Local United, which is a grouping of social entrepreneurs, did a series of kind of how-to guides. And CORE, certainly their CORE published their anaerobic digestion how-to guide, including precedents and models and all of that.
It's really good.
Thank you. That's really helpful, actually. Thank you.
That's on the recommended website as well.
Yes.
You can get it through the recommended website.
Is it only upfront costs, which is keeping geothermal out of the discussion?
You mean large geothermal?
Yes.
There's no mechanism for rewarding that at the moment. With the renewable heat incentive, doesn't include large scale geothermal.
And you can have a ground source heat pump.
Right,
yes.
But people do geothermal.
Oh, they do. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Southampton.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
that's
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Very last question from Germany.
I didn't get the words.
Right.
I mean, the geothermal. Geothermal.
It's like being in Iceland Okay. Just to wrap it together, I found that fascinating. Just going back to the point that Chris raised, I think, about the Community Energy Voice. There are a couple of organisations that I just tell you about. One is the Communities and Climate Action Alliance, or CCAA. That is effectively a network of networks. So that Transition Network is a member, the Low Carbon Communities Network is a member, the Climate Challenge Fund Communities up in Scotland, Community Energy Scotland, Community Energy Wales, all of those sorts of things are members. And we set up CCAA in order to try to get that common voice, in order to try and influence government. And one of the results of that was actually the LEAF Fund, which it had its failings, but it did start to get money out to communities. And what's interesting, as I said in my comment in plenary last night, was DEC accepted the principle that should be managed by a board from communities, which is a really interesting political precedent and principle as well. And actually the current RHPP2, Renewable Heat Premium Payment 2 scheme, is also managed by a community board, which is,
Which Peter, all the things you mentioned earlier that I was involved in, Peter is the chair.
So yeah, all right, just a detail.
Getting back.
All right, just a detail. So, what DEC have agreed at the moment is that there needs to be a community energy strategy working across the whole ambit of DEC's business. And they have also agreed that needs to be co-designed with this thing called the Ministerial Community Energy Contact Group, which is a kind of slightly different variation of people. So we are looking at the moment about how do we design a meaningful community energy strategy. These things are all very much work in progress, but I just wanted you to know that there are other things going on as well as this, where people are trying to enable all of you guys to actually go out and do the hard, massive, unpaid person decades of work.
That's never consultation. Just check on the feeding tariff, because in a document I've got here from Newell Energy Installer, there is a ban for community tariffs, but PV's not in it. But a lot of the other renewables are.
What DEC accepted was that in principle there should be a community uplift, which could include PV, could be anything. They then set it at zero for PV, if that's right.
There is a community tariff for PV.
Yes. However, we are at the moment looking at going back to them with evidence to say that actually there does need to be an uplift.
Because
for example, the cost of finance for for a community enterprise is different to the cost of finance for a commercial enterprise. Therefore, that's why they're, and they're open to having that evidence.
And it may be that the feed-in tariff degresses slower
for communities. And they're open to that as well. And I would say at the moment we have a window with both the Secretary of State and the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, who are both really into the idea of enabling communities. It's whether they can get it past Treasury that matters. Thank you very much, everyone. We really have to stop.